The following podcast is a proud member of the Miniatures Wargaming Union. For the latest wargaming news and other podcasts, check out mwunion.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the Draw Podcast. You're tuning into episode 44 for Sunday, May 11th, 2008. Happy Mother's Day to all those mothers out there, and hope you guys got your mom something really nice. I'm your host, Steve Boyce, and joining me in the Draw Podcast today is Chris Weigel.
How's it going, everyone?
And Justin Gillies.
Hey everybody!
All right, so in today's episode, we got news from the front lines. We're going to be talking about the 40K 5th edition, some war newsletter, and some other little news. In the unit of the show, we're going to be talking about the Skaven Eshin Knight Runners, so we'll get to that in just a bit. And we have a new feature on the show, a new segment, that I would personally like to see perhaps expanded upon in future episodes. So we're going to kind of put some test grounds in this one. It's called Welcome to the Underhive. And basically, it's going to be like an introduction, and we're going to be talking about some Necromunda, which is a fantastic game from Games Workshop. So that's going to be a new segment starting now, and we'll feature it on some more episodes and talk a little bit more about Necromunda, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. And last but not least, we got some listener feedback, so we'll leave that to last. But starting off, as always, it's news from the front lines. Okay, so first topic we're going to be talking about is the new 40K 5th edition rulebook. Now, as you all know, the 5th edition book is right around the corner. Games Workshop has officially announced it, and there's even a counter on their website. And we got, right as of this moment, we got 60 days, 20 hours, 28 minutes, and 55 seconds.
Nice.
54 seconds. 53 seconds, 52 seconds. Anyway, 60 days, so exactly 2 months from today, this book will be coming out. And though we have mixed opinions about it, you know, we'll wait till the book comes out. But before we talk a little bit more about it, but the interesting thing that has been announced is the limited edition preview of the book. And we actually got some first details on it. And it's a mouthful. It's the Warhammer 40,000 5th edition limited edition collector's rulebook. And basically you get a very, very nice hardcover rulebook. And it's hard to explain without actually seeing it, but it's a kind of a three panel cover that opens up, folds to the left, folds to the right. And the actual book is in the middle. It has some very nice artwork on the inside. It's basically an expanded version of the cover art of the soft cover book. And the outside has, if you look on the, you'll see on the background of the book, it's like this, I don't know what to say it is. It's kind of almost like this circular design on the front along with the Aquila. And then when you open that up, you got a really nice purity seal that's stuck on there. So it's actually, you know, not just printed on, but it's actually put on there. It's really nice. And has a nice bookmark with it as well. And that's for the one version of the rulebook. We also got another preview of the 40K Gamers Edition. And that comes with the, I believe it's the soft cover rulebook, and it also comes with the ammo crate. It's a metal crate that looks like an Imperial ammo crate. And inside of it, it comes with templates and tokens and such.
And it has a foam liner so you can put your minis in there.
Mm-hmm. Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. You know, it's all the templates. They're in clear green, and you got tons of tokens if you want to throw them on the battlefield to put some markers down for certain things. It comes, and the actual tin is pretty nice. It does look like an actual ammo crate, but yeah, the collector's edition rulebook is very nice. Again, check out our website. We have it on the front page. You can look at some pictures of it, and you have to see it first. Like I said, it's kind of hard to explain, through here because we're not video or anything. But like I said, check it out, and you'll really like it. Hell, even like the standard edition rulebook looks pretty nice for the cover.
Well, I also want to know what that little dial looking thing is. I don't know what it was in the trailer too, because I know they made like the
You're talking about the little dial on the black cover, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
and it's also on the normal rule
Rule
book,
book.
but
It's faded in the back.
yeah
You know what? It kind of looks like, well, you see the skull? I'm thinking maybe it has to do something with the tech priests of Mars or something like that. And it looks like, and you see in the trailer how it kind of like twists around. So I'm assuming it
Yeah,
has to do
it spins
something with
around.
like the tech priests.
I was thinking that, or I think it has like 12 squares on it. So I was thinking something like 12 constellations, but I don't know how that would fit in.
Is this like the different zodiac and stuff
Yeah,
like that?
maybe.
I don't know. It could be like an imperial date calendar for all we know.
Yeah.
That
Yeah.
should be really cool,
It
'cause it kind of
could be
looks like a
mentioned.
Mayan calendar, if you, well,
Yeah, that's what I
a
was
40K version.
Yeah.
But again, hard to say because
Maybe they'll tell us.
even on the close-ups and stuff, it's kind of hard to tell. But it's got like little symbols and stuff on it. So maybe we'll find out in the rule book what that actually means. Something new to the 40K lore.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, but like I said, check it out for yourself. It is relatively cool. It does look very nice. So again, it's Oh, anyway, let's talk about prices. Prices are important. How much are we forking out for this bad boy? The collector's,
The
sorry,
collector's edition
oh,
and the gamer's edition are both 90 US
$90.
dollars.
Yeah.
Yep. So $90 for either the very sexy rulebook, or $90 for the standard rulebook and the very cool ammo crate. So hard decision. I may just go for it, the collector's edition book, but that's a lot to fork out. So I'll just go for the standard book.
Yeah, that's what I was
I
thinking
think
of.
if I was gonna go for anything, I'd probably go for the Gamer's Edition just 'cause I've misplaced all my like artillery thing, all my artillery counters and all that.
Oh,
So
okay.
this would be good, for, a newcomer or, someone coming back to the game.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, all you're really paying for is the crate. The other stuff's just plastic tokens that you can probably, find cheaper
But the
at other places, or templates are, you can find very cheap online. So you're just paying for a nice little case. I'm not even sure how big that case is per se, because they haven't shown the exact size of it. But if that picture is correct, then we're looking similar to the size of
rule book or
the
somewhere
rule book.
similar, somewhere similar.
I can't
Yeah.
imagine it being that small.
I don't know. I can imagine that not being too big.
Well, it might be heavy, so yeah, I guess they might not be too big, but I would still say probably about the size of the smaller army cases.
Yeah, we'll see. Until we get some more details, we'll see it in person. So it's not too far. We'll probably see it at Games Day. So
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
anyway, let's move on to our next topics. Gillies, want to talk about the new advance orders?
Okay, so new advance orders. Basically, Games Workshop just sent us a little list or previewed a list on their website of new advance orders to get, which is pretty exciting. We
Hobby based,
well,
that's
yeah,
fine.
hobby base. We have, of course, the How to Paint Miniature Citadel Miniatures book. It's I think it's the latest edition, right?
Yep, the revision of the previous book. If you know standard How to Paint Citadel Miniatures, they're actually really good books, tons of tips in there. And this is just a revision that includes a little bit more tips and some of the more current models.
Yeah, because if you see on the website, you can you can see the new high elf, the new high elf model, and the
new vampire, some new chaos.
Go ahead.
I actually have the old book, and actually they had one of the examples they had is how to paint like Riders of Rohan. And the fact that they used the green cloaks really helped me out when it came to painting my wood elf cloaks and stuff like that. So even if you find something in there that maybe like, you know, fantasy based or 40k based, and say you play only fantasy and something 40k based, it still can apply.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's got some great pictures there for anyone who just wants to collect it, you know, just to take a look at some miniatures. Also going online with the miniatures, we got some new advance orders on a fair bit of Chaos minis. We got the new Keeper looking of Keeper Secrets for Slaanesh. Also, the great looking Crater Unclean one for Nurgle. And also the Soul Grinder. How would you guys describe the Soul Grinder?
Demonic Defiler.
Yeah, it's basically just a Defiler, but the with demon a... inside the Defiler kind of just, he broke out of his metal shell.
Yeah.
So basically a very pissed off metal demon.
Yeah, I would say so.
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, how would you feel if you were just, you know, strolling around, killing someone someday, and all of a sudden someone put you in a metal box? You wouldn't be too happy about it either.
While being tortured in the inside while piloting this giant mechanical machine. Yeah,
I'd be pretty pissed.
This is like an unbound demon that fused itself with the Defiler.
It looks really, really interesting.
And considering it's all plastic too, so you know, it's quite a piece.
Hmm. I like it. I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of Soul Grinders than Defilers nowadays. Well, once it comes out.
Well, you can easily use a Soul Grinder, so kind of as a Defiler if you wish. I would definitely use that. Do some awesome converting.
Have a giant battle can come out of his mouth.
I would do something.
Alright, then what else we got here? We also got some fantasy, more focused demons with the new Fleshhounds of Khorne, also with their special leader. Would you say he's a leader or just a special unit?
Yeah, no, he's a leader. They said that upgraded champion, you get him.
For those who don't know, I'm talking about
Karnak.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, I was kind of sounding that out in my head. Yeah, they have him up, and also with the new little demons going around. On top of that, also, we have some more Chaos Nurgle Plague Bearers, which are looking very, very nice and lovely. And various other Chaos things, revamps of Screamers, Nurglings, and also the new Demonettes of Slaanesh. And also we have a new Champion of Khorne, Skull Taker, coming out. And on top of that, we have a couple new of the Citadel paints, such as Badab Black, Griffinian Cepha. I can't pronounce that properly.
Oh, sorry. These are all... these are not paints. These are actually
the foundation.
Not foundations. These are washes. They are basically the inks of yesteryear. And, that's what we had listed down. They come in a variety of new colors. So, yeah, Badab Black. Griffin Sepia. Ogryn
Flesh.
Delvin Mud. Bal Red. Leviathan Purple. Azurmin Blue. And Thraka Green.
They're all very good, deep colors. So, probably really good for, inking, of course, as you...
Yeah,
they're the inks of yesteryear, for lack of a better
word. So you can buy them independently
for about
they're on the UK site, so they're listed for £2,
and on the US
they're
site
about $4.
$3 on the US site.
Yeah,
and if you just want to get all eight in one box on the US site, it's $20.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's for the watch set.
For all eight washes, yeah.
Yep, in 12-milliliter canisters. They're the new flip-lit canisters as well. Same canisters that they use for the foundations.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's basically it on the side of advanced sorters.
No, wait, actually, there's one more. One more special item. Now, here's the thing. It's not listed in particular on the Games Workshop site.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I forgot about that.
It was actually a preview, so a teaser on the Canadian site.
Right.
That they actually put up a preview on our new hobby tools that are coming. They show off the new washes, but also they show off what's called the Citadel Spray Gun, and basically it's GW's airbrush gun.
It looks fantastic, just because also the fact Games Workshop modeled it after a flamer from 40K.
It looks like a hand flamer, which is pretty awesome. I really like that style to it, but it has the canister, which is right under the nozzle, so it's not actually incorporated to the handle as certain airbrush guns. But it looks pretty nice. There's no details on it whatsoever. Like I said, the GW Canadian site
just gave us a little picture, right?
Just put up a teaser picture of it, and from the looks of it, it's all black. Orange trigger, and the hose actually comes off the top instead of like underneath the handle or whatnot. But hard to say until we see some more pictures of it and whatnot. But yes, the washes are set to come out on June 7th, mm-hmm. and the Citadel spray gun is to come out on June 21st, which also just happens to be Games Day.
Yes.
So. We'll be looking at that bad boy firsthand when we go down there.
Exactly.
So I may even pick it up, and we'll do a hands-on preview right then and there with it. So hopefully it doesn't cost you an arm and a leg, which I'm kind of afraid it will.
Well,
it's GW. It will cost you an arm and a leg.
If they can triple the price of a file or whatnot, they can do anything with that. So we'll see. We'll see. But again, June 21st is when that come out, and believe me, we'll definitely have previews of this stuff when it's time. But so that's something really interesting. If you want to see the picture of it, go to ca.games-workshop.com and go to the online store, and you'll see it right on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it for the advance orders. So like I said, keep an eye out for that stuff. Demons, whatever how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Tomato, tomato, you know. Everyone has their own version of it, but,
yeah, but I've never heard
anyway,
of a tomato.
Yeah, really. I don't know why. That's really stupid.
Tomato, tomato. I've never heard tomato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically, it's daemons, but people are pronouncing it demons. So, yeah.
I just cut out the A.
Just like Daemon Hunters, not
Demon Hunters. Demon Hunters.
Yeah.
A doesn't count for anything.
Yeah. But again, tomato, 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 tomato.
It's not a real letter.
Wait,
catch up, cats.
perhaps the A is silent.
Stop talking.
I prefer that option. But he's got cover news. We need him to talk. So
sure.
We got lucky this time. All right, so we're gonna move on to our last news topic today, and it's quite a doozy. One that we always look forward to every month, and that is the War newsletter. So, Chris, you want to take her away?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Anyway, April 2008's War newsletter came out, which is odd because I actually found it on the Warhammer Online site before I found it in my mailbox, which I was kind of surprised about. Anyway, in this month, they have a production podcast on the introduction to guilds and how the guild system is really going to work out. And I showed this to Steve. I don't know if Gillies has seen it. But it really does look interesting on how they're doing guilds.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Each member in the guild has really a different role.
Mm-hmm.
From like standard bearer to like musician, and then like the keep system. The guild owns the keep, not the like if the whole realm takes over the keep, the guild can claim it for the realm. Not mm-hmm. just like, oh, it's the side of disorder. It's the MW unions because we're all
yeah.
So, and like, there's a whole class system involved. You really have to check it out in order to really understand the full potential and fully what their concept is behind the guild system. Also, just more, just the same details and reiteration of the War Collector's Edition pre-order, which I've pre-ordered. I know Steve has pre-ordered. He had problems with it and was yelling at me for it.
I absolutely have. Again, living in Canada, it kind of screwed me over because all these places, I wanted to go through Amazon, and though, you know, Amazon ships worldwide, some reason would not send this game to Canada.
Really?
So, yeah, the only way, if you're in Canada and you want to pre-order and get the bonuses, and you can pre-order anywhere, like EB does and stuff, but if you want to get the special promos with it, then you need to go with the EA store. That's your best bet. You can do GameStop as well, but GameStop charges through the nose for shipping and everything, so you get screwed over there.
Yeah.
But go to the EA store. It's the cheapest way I found to get it. So, and I've already pre-ordered, and I've already received my email with my beta key, my special
edition
items,
nonsense.
Keys, and... what was the third key for again?
It
was items, data, and... the access.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I got all already, so...
But yeah, if you're gonna... Just a tip, if you're gonna pre-order from GameStop or EB Games, do not do it online. Go to a store and pre-order. Because when I went online to check it out, they charged $10 shipping, standard. So, like, that's 3 to 5 days. On top of that, they're going to charge you another $10 because the box is an odd-shaped box.
Are you serious?
I am not kidding you. It said that the fact that the package is a different size than normal, they will charge you $10 for the different shipping and stuff like that. For the different box size and stuff like that. So do not order it offline. If from GameStop or EB Games, definitely get it from either Amazon, Best Buy, or the EA store. If you're going to go into a store, get it from GameStop or EB Games, but do not order it from EB Games or GameStop online. It was just one of those stupid things I found. I was like, yeah, okay, that item might help me better from GameStop, but I'm not pumping out another $10 for an item. You know, I'll gladly settle with the one from Amazon. And I got overnight shipping, you know, for the same price as 5-day standard and the odd-shaped box. So, you know, it's worth it, in my opinion. Also, beta updates. They introduced the Empire and Chaos Tier 3 and 4s.
Mm-hmm.
In-game mail, siege testing, campaign testing, and fortresses. 12 careers are open, and career mastery in the High Elf Swordsmaster, Archmage, Shadow Warrior, Empire Witch Hunter, Bright Wizard Warrior Priest. And outside of Destruction, they have the Career Mastery System up for the Disciple King, Witch Elf Sorceress, the Chaos Chosen, Zealot, and Marauder. Yep. Yeah, just some more testing still going on, of course.
Yep, absolutely.
What I found odd, though, is I was looking on the site the other day, and they still haven't released the fourth High Elf class.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's still to be determined. Hopefully we get to hear that in the... May newsletter.
Yeah.
I'm making a prediction right here, right now. I'm thinking it's going to be a white lion, but that's just me being hopeful.
I'm doubtful.
I'm doubtful on the white lion. I think it's the fact that they have...
What do you guys think?
See, this is the problem I think they ran into. I think the fact that the Swordsmaster takes up the tanker class, the Shadow Warrior takes up the range class, and the Archmage takes up the Magic Nuker. They really don't have a close combat DPS class. And the fact is, if you look at the High Elf range, there really is no close combat High Elf DPS, unless you go with like a High Elf Prince.
Well, that's where I'm going in with the White Lion, because the White Lion in tabletop, or what it looks like, is very barbaric. And like barbarians in most games are very high DPS, so that's what I'm assuming.
They're usually more tankers than they are anything else, but that's just from experience. Anyway, moving on.
Maybe Phoenix Guard, or...
Yeah, but see, that's still a spear, and a spear doesn't really attack that fast. Oh, Never mind. It says coming next month. Reveal the final final elf career. Look at that.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
See, they're axe slash spear.
Yeah.
We'll
find out in May. Now that I look at it, because I didn't pay attention. See what happens. Pay attention, people. Anyway, scenarios 101. Just more areas. The Grovod Caverns and the Reichland Hills. Career mastery update for the Swordmaster and the Sorceress. The war cinematic image of the Dark Elf Sorceress.
That's, again, looking
really,
awesome.
Really
and hot.
And hot. I was about to say sexy.
This cinematic has me stoked because they seem to be...
Well, now it does. After seeing the Sorceress. Don't lie.
Yeah, you kind of caught me. No, I just, they're kind of doing, like, with the other war cinematic, it was just the first three classes, and hopefully,
And a Slayer.
Race. Yeah, he had a Slayer for some reason.
Yeah.
But they had the first three races, the Orcs, Dwarves, and Empire. Dark Elves, so they're versus races, sorry.
Yeah,
but
they really didn't
this
have
one,
that
I like how they're going to have all of them in there, and hopefully more of each. Like, you've already saw, what was it, the Squig Herder?
Squig Herder, Shadow Warrior.
Yeah, and
the Engineer.
Engineer, and hopefully we get to see the other stuff, like the Warrior Priest.
Well, I don't
hopefully
doubt
we
it.
Get all this stuff together.
Well,
we
saw, we've seen a Warrior Priest. I just hope we see a Warrior Priest that, you know, doesn't
kicks
get
ass.
Killed.
No.
Really. That was the only guy that got killed in the entire cinematic.
Because he deserved to die.
Well, with the exception of the Orc. The Orc died.
Oh, yeah, the Orc
slammed against
the
wall. Hilariously.
But there was another...
I love how that's actually going to be put into the game, the chance that if you are in an Orcapult, you will not reach and you will slam into the wall.
Yeah.
I love how that's a chance. So Orc
from what we've seen, it's not... like that, like you're not flying like that and you hit the wall face first and slam down. It's just like you're flying and you can miss and then you slam back on your feet.
Well,
but if they
that
did
may
something
change.
Like that would be awesome.
That
it
may
would be
change.
Funny.
I think it'd be funny. I think I find it more funny to die than just sit there at the base of them and be like, oh man, now I gotta run all the way up there. Anyway, I'd rather die and launch myself again personally, but anyway. Moving on, one of the Golden Demon winners in France is actually the Dwarf Slayer, based on the original cinematic, which is really, really a nice model. It was done by it was in the open category, and it was done by David
Weisselnik.
Sorry if we all butchered your name there.
Yeah, sorry, but. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous miniature. I really do congratulate him on it. He deserved it.
The amount of detail on it, too, is just amazing. Like, the tattoos are dead on.
Yeah.
He did a really great job.
Skin tones. I'm really impressed by the skin tones, because that's kind of one hard thing to do, and he blended it together really well. Same with the hair.
Mm-hmm.
But, very well done. Congratulations to you. You really deserve that Slayer Sword.
Definitely.
Yeah. The next section is the zone overview of Etienne. I think I pronounced it. I think that's how it's pronounced. It's a high elf area. New concept art of chaos creatures.
What is this? A Daemonette that is somewhat revealing herself? Not censored?
What?
Anyway. Well, sorry.
Sorry, this is just a really creepy picture.
Yeah, it has as much boob as a man. So...
as many boobs as Gillies. Kidding, Gillies.
Oh.
I think I just died a little inside.
I've always wondered if Gillies was from Slaanesh.
Though that one random image on our forums is right. Just because it looks like a woman doesn't mean we know what's underneath the loincloth.
True enough. True.
Very true.
Yeah.
Anyway, they'll have the Magus, a Demonette, a Knight of Zeech, the Lord of Change. Finally, unfortunately, it's just concept art.
Yeah.
Marauder of Tzeentch, Slaanesh Champion, Zealot of Slaanesh, Warrior of Tzeentch, and something called a Slime Hound. I really have no idea what that is. It kind of just looks like a giant horned earthworm.
But it's Nurgle.
Slug.
It's a...
Oh.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I like, though, that you're getting this idea that, you know, EA is making Tzeentch be the main, you know, force of chaos here, but also you get to see the other four gods have a little...
Yep.
Well, see, that's what I think is done right compared to other Warhammer games. Like, if you look at Dawn of War first, I mean, you have the Tzeentch horrors, but besides that, you have the Khorne Berserkers, you have the Bloodthirster, you know, it's mainly, it's mainly Khorne-based. But here, it's, you play as Tzeentch, but they're not forgetting about the other gods, which is nice.
Yeah.
And I'm finally happy that Tzeentch is the focal point, because I'm honestly sick and tired of the whole Khorne thing. And I think in the tabletop, Tzeentch is very underplayed. And the fact that, if you look at the new demon miniatures, there's no new Tzeentch miniatures whatsoever. All they did was they took the same Tzeentch miniatures that had been out, and they redistributed them, like the Flamers, and the Flamers, they moved from the champion of the Horror Squad into a rare unit. They made no new horrors. They made the rare, the special unit, Screamers, and there's no new Herald model.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. Personally, I love Tzeentch the most, so I'm going to be a little bit of a fan about it. But
I think... I love their style.
I love the style. I love the fact that they use magic more than anything else. It's just the fact I think they're underplayed, and I think they're underappreciated by Games Workshop. So I'm finally seeing... I like seeing them finally in the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
In a decent game, not like Fire Warrior. I bashed two of your games in the same rant. I'm sorry. Anyway, there's new concept art for more Order and Destruction NPCs.
Yes, two of the one of the most famous Warhammer Fantasy characters out there. So we got one of my favorite top two as well, and that's Gotrek and Felix.
Oh,
about for them, which are they have already confirmed before that Gotrek and Felix are going to be featured in the game.
Well, they're a big part of the Warhammer world.
Yeah,
you
they are. They really are. And we also got the. Empire Bright Wizard Thyrus Scorman, and we got the Grand
Theologist
Volkmark. And also the Dark Elf MC Beastmaster. It's just a generic Beastmaster.
For now.
I know this sounds bad, but where is Thyrus from? I haven't really heard of him before.
I couldn't tell you. He may not actually be from any lore. He could be just made up for the game, but I could be mistaken on that.
Then again, none of us play Empire, so that doesn't really help.
Yeah.
The fact that we
true.
Don't really know the lore.
I'm not, not too big into Empire lore myself,
yeah.
So I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, well, sorry. If anyone knows, send us an email about it. Love to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also, of course, Paul's video blogs.
Yep.
New item.
Wasn't that funny this month?
What?
Wasn't that funny this month?
No.
It was good still, but you know, he had better months. I'll say.
Yeah.
It's always good.
They're always good. It's just sometimes they're funnier than others. This was one of the off months. I think mainly because they're really trying to crank out on the game.
Yeah.
They really can't be joking around too much anymore because now everyone's getting tense about it. The fact that it's being pushed back again and again. And again, and everyone and all the fans are trying to get on their ass about it. So they really have to really cut down on the kidding around, and they kind of have to actually get to work, actually do their job. Which I'm not saying they haven't been doing before, but now that they have to push it, now that there's all the fan pressure, because all the fans are, you know, Age of Conan's coming out in May. I mean, there's no way it's going to compete. I mean, Wrath of the Lynch King will be coming out sometime around there, too. I mean... So,
now they
just
got to be ready to step up the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Also, finally, there's a new item in the EA Mythic War Store, and that is a belt buckle with the orc symbol that they've been using, the war orc symbol they've been using. So, yeah, I'm done.
Good stuff. All right. So again, see the war news there. If you want to check it out on our website or subscribe to it, which we suggest you do.
Damn definitely. Right.
Exactly. Alrighty, so that's it for the war news letter. Right now, we're going to move on to the unit of the show. Alright, so now we're on to unit of the show. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Skaven. As we stated last episode, this is going to kind of be a Skaven-centric episode. Didn't quite happen because we had some other content to fill in instead. We had some Skaven army lists we were going to kind of go over, but we'll save that probably for next episode. But in this one, we're going to be talking about the Night Runners. But I think they look kind of monkey-ish, in my opinion. But the actual miniature base. But anyway, Clannish and Night Runners are fast skirmishers who are notorious for the low survivability of their troops. This is the Ashen way to ensure that they are worthy to make it through the ranks of the Gutter Runners. They are part of Clan Ashen forces, which went to the Far East to learn their stealth tactics. So, for the pros of the Skaven Night Runners, the strength and numbers rule. So the deal with Skaven in their strength and numbers rule is that the more Skaven ranks you have, the higher the leadership goes. Base leadership for Skaven is relatively low, so they do scurry away rather quickly. But more units you have, the more ranks you add in, the higher the leadership goes out. So it's definitely a bonus. For Skaven and Jonas, a general Skaven universal rule doesn't apply in particular too much for the Night Runners because they are a skirmisher unit, but having other Skaven units does help boost it up a bit. So it is good to have that. The life is cheap rule. So another deal with Skaven, another universal rule that's good with them is that with Skaven, there is a tendency that they accidentally kill themselves. This mainly is directed more towards units with stronger weapons like warp lightning cannons, Giselles, Globardiers, that sort of thing. They can kill themselves. Or other units, such if you have like a warp flamethrower, you could be killing your own Skaven. So the life is cheap rule kind of helps out with morality and stuff like that. So it does makes it not so bad if you start losing your own units.
Losing and, units so is bad.
So they have some weapon options for the units. Skaven are not really a ranged army for their core units. I'm not talking special weapons. I'm talking about for their core units. But for just for basic units, you can have the slings, throwing knives, like shurikens, weird little items that they can throw. So that's what's part of this. They all count as slingshots.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. So do you mean like slings, like the things that they spin around and they like throw a little rock at them?
Yep.
Or are you talking like a slingshot word?
Yep. No, the actual slings, I think.
Yep, right? It is the actual sling, like a little like a leather
belt. I thought you meant they found like a Y-shaped thing attached to a rubber band that they found and just started whipping rocks at people. It's like, that's awesome.
That would be awesome. That very would be.
They really could. It can just be a stick with some, material on it, and a sharp, pointy rock.
Dummy stuff that they find in their forest and
oh yeah,
down the sewers. And
if they come up with a warp lightning cannon, I'm pretty sure they can create a slingshot. They're primitive, but they have some
technical advantages.
Yeah. They kind of surpass the spears. So it's kind of good that they do have some variety like that. But they're not too much in range. You're looking at short-ranged weapons, so there's some downfall to that. For cons, low leadership. This is, again, a problem with Skaven, is the low leadership system. They can scurry pretty fast. They lose combat pretty fast. So having, again, lots of blocks of troops, of, say, more core infantry and such, of Skaven units, does help them. And it does actually, it kind of counters the low leadership. So having more blocks does boost up their leadership. So it's kind of good, especially for them being skirmishers. You do want that. And lastly for cons is that without multi-unit support, they do horrible on their own. The Skaven are not exactly close combat fighting machines. And the one thing with them is that as soon as they're in combat, they're pretty much screwed over. Unless, like, on their own. If you have one unit versus one unit,
they're dead.
They're pretty much dead. Not always the case. They can win if you're lucky enough or whatnot, but it's just they're not designed around that. You need to have other units, 2 to 3 units flanking in, coming to give support, because, you know, if someone has, well, you know, Lizardmen being their opponent, having a unit of Saurus Warriors against, you know, a unit of the Night Runners, it's obviously who's going to win. It's obviously the Lizardmen. But if you start having in a unit of Night Runners and all of a sudden some Gutter Runners come in or some other Clan Rats, then you have the backup support in there. But one-on-one,
they're going to die.
They're not going to last long. So that is a problem with them. So they're meant for other tactics. So, Gilles, you want to read off the quick tactic?
Yeah, so basically, Night Runners are low point in the Skaven army. They are really just a distraction for the enemy, whilst your other units mainly do the dirty work. They do have those range options. They're very short, but they can sometimes be effective. As Steve was going on, they're basically going to get killed in close combat no matter what. So, yeah. Basically, what you really should be doing is throwing your Night Runners as a distraction, or maybe to, you know, harass that big group of heavy hitters coming too close to your army. So, say if, like, Black Orcs are coming and you don't want your Clan Rats to, you know, take too much of a beating, that's where you would send your Night Runners in and, you know, whittle down some of the orcs if they can.
Yeah, they're really a good, a very short and temporary lockup unit. They're good if you're trying to avoid a future encounter. You can throw your Night Runners at them. They are very disposable, so it's good to be doing that. Like I said, they're kind of meant to be the nuisance for your enemy. Having a few of them, just, you know, do your somewhat ranged damage and then let them be charged, you know. Like I said, you're not going to be crying over them when they die, because it's meant to happen.
Yeah. As a player who's played against Night Runners, it is very annoying when you have your army and you know you're going to go in for the kill, and then out of nowhere comes these Night Runners, and you have to adjust your plan now that these quick little skirmishers came around.
Yeah. Yeah, I too have fought against some Night Runners, and yeah, that's all they're designed for. Is they're meant to be the little nuisance that distracts you from the main course. So keep an eye on them if you're against them, but also think ahead when you're using them and who you want to lock up. But don't just lock up anybody though. Now, if you're going to be locking up a unit of Chaos Knights, you're screwed. But if you're doing like some
core units, maybe.
Some core units, yeah, like some, I don't know, some archers or something like that, something that's on equal grounds, then maybe you're good for a few rounds. But, yeah, going against some hard-hitting units, perhaps a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, depending on how it all works out, usually can work to your advantage, but try to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Chris, you want to read off our listener tip?
Yeah, sure. This is sent in by Richard Millen. It says, Skaven had a tendency to be weak on their own, especially Night Runners. The main way to avoid the problem is mass units, which in turn helps leadership problems, which hinders them. Night Runners.
There you go.
I know, I missed a period there. Night Runners in a particular are not something that you may want to mass units in, leaving it to the other Ratmen. They are good for the I don't care if you die unit. The cheap costs make them pretty disposable. They are good to literally throw the crap at the enemy. Obviously, the little buggers are not meant to last long, but it's great to have little annoying units at your enemies. Those being skirmishers make them decent for quickly capturing points and other objectives.
All right, so thank you, Richard, and Chris being handicapped for reading right now.
Dude, it's late. Shut up.
Who's our little champion?
It's late.
Please tell me you didn't put your finger along when reading along
no,
the screen.
No, I didn't.
Skaven have a...
hey, it's 11:15. I have a game tomorrow, okay?
Jeez. We're not in grade 6 anymore, Chris.
Huh? You're funny.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Anyway. So that's it for the Skaven Night Runners. We'll be talking about Skaven in future shows. Like I said, yeah, I would like to get into as much as I despise Skaven. They're my enemies. I do like talking about them because they are pretty unique. Mm-hmm. No one likes playing the oversized creature race for some reason. What's with that? Everyone likes the humans or demons or elves. No one likes the oversized rats or lizards. Yeah,
because all you have to do is go to New York City to see giant rats.
Well, take a picture. There you go. You have your Skaven.
Go to Toronto. Go to Los Angeles. Go to any major city in the United States, Canada, right, or any country in Europe, and you will see giant Skaven running around.
You see a man getting mugged by a Night Runner.
Absolutely. All right. So in our next episode, we're going to be talking about the 40K Eldar Harlequins. Oh, one of my favorite units of the game. Actually, one of my favorite armies of the game. So we're going to be kind of...
Expect Steve to go on a half-hour rant.
Yeah.
So you may be wondering...
Harlequins should be their own army again! God!
Hey, they should! Why not? Why not?
Stop.
So we're actually... This is going to be pretty neat because we're going to be doing more than just one unit, and we're going to kind of be covering a bit of the Harlequins. So we're going to be going through, Death Jesters to some of the other stuff. I would like to talk about the old Harlequins, which were completely better, in my opinion. Like the Solitaire and stuff like that. And...
Why are we being quiet?
What?
I don't know. It was my attempt to silence him.
Oh.
Well, you silenced everyone. Good job, Gilly.
Yeah, way to go ruin the show for crying out loud. That's why we don't like you on here. You ruin things.
That's why we give you our own podcast.
That's why we give you your own show. And we'll talk about that later.
Just kidding.
Anyway, if you have any questions... Sorry, what am I doing? If you have any tips or tricks on this unit, send them into mwunion@gmail.com. mwunion@gmail.com. And we'll talk about the Harlequins. So that could be any of the Harlequin units. Try to keep it to the new ones, not the old ones, unfortunately.
It looks like I'm perhaps... not the only one who is tired, Steve.
You guys are too young to tuck it out. But anyway. So yeah, we'll be talking about that next episode. So send in your thoughts and we'll talk about that. So, right now, we are going to move on to our last major topic, actually, last major segment of the show, and that is something I like to call Welcome to the Underhive. So, for this, there's a lot to be covering in this, but I'm kind of just going to give a quick little overview of what the game is, how it works, and some of the different units and houses and such. So I don't want to spend too long on this, but I just want to give you a just a quick little overview on what Necromunda really is. So if you haven't heard of Necromunda before, it's a skirmish game for Warhammer 40,000. Sorry, based within Warhammer 40,000. It really is, in my opinion, like the Mordheim of 40K. It's gang battles of the future. It's where you build up your gang and your fight for supremacy, taking over territories, taking claim to treasure, you know, really showing who's boss of the area. And it's really unique because it's very, very much in vein of Mad Max and all these other post-apocalyptic type movies. And so it really has a really neat theme to it. The game is based around this planet called Necromunda, and on it is it's called the Hive. And the Hive is basically a 10-mile high structure, and within that structure is different levels. The top level, the highest point of the spire, is where kind of all the riches live, all the rich people live, and it's the high authorities of the Hive, of Necromunda. They're way on the top up there.
Posh people.
And as you, yeah, very posh people, as you get to the top. As you start going down in the different levels of the Hive, you start getting into dirtier, you know, levels and very barren places. And the lower you go, there's different houses. And all these houses are constantly playing tug-of-war with each other, fighting over for different areas. And then as soon as you get to the lower parts of it, you start getting to the Underhive. And basically the Underhive was at one part the ground level of this spire, and because of this planet being a barren wasteland covered in toxic ashes and stuff, that it built up so high above the ground, like a mile or two above the ground of just ashes, that it's the living conditions underneath there are pretty unstable. And then below that, it's called the Sump, and the Sump is way below ground, about a mile underground, and pretty much uninhabitable underneath there. And the only thing that can live beneath there is you're looking at the mutants and the scavies, that sort of thing. Things that were deformed and probably birthed down within there. A normal human would never stand a chance living down there because it's so toxic and poisonous.
Kind of like if you watch Futurama, New York.
Yeah, exactly.
It's New York of Futurama.
Old New York or whatnot. You got New York above the ground and old New York below ground. And then the you know, the sewers where all the mutants live. That's pretty much what Necromunda is. But I'm not sure what the Hive really is. So it's really a weird place. But yeah, anyway, that's what the spire is. It's a really, really dirty place. And like I said, if you want a good representation of you know, the styling and such, really look into Mad Max, those type of movies, because that's kind of where it's inspired from, and vice versa. The whole, you know, like wearing leather with giant spikes and mohawks and riding these custom made scrapped together heaps of vehicles and you know, custom plates of armor and pretty crappy guns. That's all what it is. It's just people trying to survive. And the game system for it is really unique. It's kind of a takeoff of 40K, but it's much more an in-depth version of it. It's not so vast as 40K, where you need all these rules to cover everything. It's a more defined rule set, where because it's all just infantry based, basically. And upon that, they're able to go into more detail. So you still have all your main stats. The stats actually go in the ways of Warhammer Fantasy, where it's weapon skill, ballistic skill, strength, toughness, wounds, initiative, attack, and leadership. But they also include movement, which is not in 40K, well, anymore at least. And it's included in Necromunda. So every character has their own movements and stuff like that. And when you get into the game, when you get into the game, you have different phases. It's not somewhat the same phases as 40K, where it's movement, you know, movement and shooting, that sort of thing. It's sorry if I'm wrong to say, I haven't played in a while, but it was movement, shooting, combat, and recovering phase. And the recovering phase is really neat. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But the what's really unique about the system is the damage for it. And if you want actually a good representation, look at a game like Fallout for the computer. Targeting different areas of the body, doing damage to that can disable certain weapons and such. So it's not where you can't in particular target certain areas, but you're rolling for damage for certain areas. So if you roll, you can take head damage, and all of a sudden your guy could be knocked out. Or you can take arm damage, and if your guy had a weapon in that arm is now useless, and you can't use that weapon. Or if you're carrying a two-handed weapon, you're screwed for that. And there's different things where if you get knocked down, you can do things like try to recover. And if you try to recover, you can sometimes do more damage to yourself. So you're trying to heal yourself, maybe like yanking out the bullets or whatnot. Or other things such as, let's say if you got shot in the back or whatnot, and you're on the ground, your legs are knocked out. The only way for you can still move is basically just drag your body using your arms. And that's your only means of movement. So it takes the shooting system of 40K and makes it really in-depth by adding this whole system where it pinpoints the wound, specific body parts the of
wound,
the body.
The wound system sounds a lot like if you play Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay or Dark Heresy, where
yeah,
that's another, damage chart.
Sounds almost like a B, really.
What's that?
Sounds like an RPG, really.
That's the thing. It has the elements of an RPG, but it takes it in this fast pace.
So it's a role playing real time strategy. So kind of combine. Not
it
really,
means
turn based.
It has the role play elements to it, like I said, but it makes it very fast paced and very action packed, and you're not sitting there, you know, like writing everything down. You know, and taking a long time to do all these different maneuvers and recovery and stuff like that.
And you're not also saying to your buddy, are you done yet? Because you're waiting for your turn to, you know, fire a shot or whatever.
Yep, and it's all dice-based. So if you roll to see what happens, you're not doing other things to determine what happens. So it's really, really an awesome system. And the battles change every single time. Like, there'd be times, you know, where three of my guys got knocked down, and one of my other guys tried to help him, and made it worse, and almost killed the guy. And there's times where he made it back up, got shut down again, was unable to walk for the rest of the game. So, like I said, it's pretty unique, and I really do like the system a lot. So, but again, it's something you should try out firsthand to really, really experience it. Moving on, the way that the game is laid out, if you're used to 40K, you know, you're used to Headquarter, Elite, Troop, Fast Attack, and Heavy Support. A similar, system to this, it's not exactly the same, but there's some similarities to it. You have your gang leader, which is like your headquarter unit, your chief, you know, your boss, your gang leader. He's the main guy of your unit. Gangers, which are the core of your gang. They're your main guys, kind of like your main infantry. Beyond that, you get into heavies, which are your heavy support guys. They're the gangers that can carry the big heavy weapons. You also go into other characters like juves or juveniles. They're very weak units. They're much cheaper, but you can add a few more of them. So there are some ways of balancing that out. They're kind of almost like the scouts of the gang. Much weaker, but they do their thing. So four options with that, but you know, not as vast, but they're very customizable. And you get a lot more customization out of this than you would in 40K. And it has a customization, sorry, I would probably say beyond in some respects than Dark Heresy for your stuff. So like I said, when you're building your gang, you start off with 1,000 guilder credits. Everything costs a certain amount of points. So, you know, a gang leader, you're looking at 120 credits, gangers, 50 credits. So you do have your minimum requirements. You're at minimum to have three gangers, or no, sorry, not three gangers. You have to at least have three fighters in your army, so there at least must be three. At least must have one gang leader. You can have as many gangers as you want, a maximum of two heavies, and then, sorry, and no more than half of your gang can be made up of juveniles, because or else everyone will just make a very huge gang of juves because they're so cheap. You can get two juveniles for the same price as a ganger. So, like I said, there is some limitations, but you get the 1,000 points to go spend on what you want, build your gang the way you want, just follow the limitations. And you don't have to, you know, you can have those three characters you want, and then stock up on weapons, stock up on equipment, that sort of thing. So, a lot of variety in there. Weapon-wise and such, you're getting a ton of variety. Every Imperial weapon you can think of is in the game, from stub guns to las pistols to web pistols. You name it, it's in here. Chain swords, power fists, though they're a lot more expensive, because these weapons are rare to come by. You can also get very, very special weapons like missile launchers, heavy bolters, melta guns, that sort of thing.
Sorry to interrupt, Steve. I just have a quick question. You mentioned that there are different houses, and going on with weapons, being part of a different house, does that give different options for weapons? So would one house, you'd be able to get a power fist for cheaper or something like that?
No, but here's the thing, which actually we'll get to the houses in just actually I'll get to the houses now. Every house has like there's no weapon specific per house. They all have the same variety of weapons, so there is that balance there where everyone has the exact same options to get to any weapons you want. But every house is different in its own way. There are six houses in the game. We'll start from the beginning here. So you got House Orlok. Orlok are kind of like your you know your workers. They get from the slag pits, rebelling against that sort of deal. And then you get to Goliath, House Goliath, which are the big, bulky, muscle building Mohawk
American
guys.
gladiators are the 41st
Pretty
one,
much.
yeah.
They're the big muscle guys that just want to beat the crap. In a way, they're like the orcs of Necromunda. They're stupid, but they're strong. You know, all no brains, all brawn.
WWE wrestlers.
Exactly. House Van Saar, they're the technical experts of the game. They know how to make weapons that work. Everyone is scrapping together weapons. These guys take time, make weapons that'll last long, that sort of deal. So they're really good. They're very technically advanced. They're good with that. House Escher, it's actually one of my favorites. I play Goliaths myself, but I'm really tempted to start an Escher gang. Escher is a female-only gang. They're all females in there. They're pretty round statistically. But I do like them a lot. They're more fast than the other armies because they're very agile because they are women. But it's really neat to see that, brightly colored too. House Del Lake, they're the, or Del Act, depending on how you pronounce it, they're the, basically the spies of Necromunda. They're all, you know, in trench coats, sunglasses, specialty, you know, equipment, that sort of thing. So they're like operatives, but very low-tech ones. Very, you know, not your James Bond or anything like that, but like I said, they are pretty unique like that. And then lastly, the last one of the main houses is Kaldor, and they're basically the, how should I say, they're, you know, cult fanatics. They're followers of the Cult of Redemption, you know, believers of the flame, that sort of thing. So they got all the guys wearing the hoods, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, there's some that represent KKK hoods, that sort of thing. They're not that though. They just have a similar. Some of them have a similar style to that. But yeah, they're the crazy cultist fanatics, that sort of deal. So again, pretty. They're all. All the gangs are pretty unique in their own style. They have their own style to them, so I like that. So you're not having anything that's similar to each other. Some may have some similarities, but they're all really totally different visually. But as Gillies was asking, you know, do they have uniqueness to them weapon-wise? No, but every house is categorized under different skill types. There's seven skill types. There's agility, combat, ferocity, muscle, shooting, stealth, and technology, or techno. Kaldor is mainly ferocity. It determines every unit in the gang as under different categories. So a heavy may be good at shooting, and muscle, where maybe a juvenile may be good at agility and stealth. So they're each categorized in different things. But in general, the gang is listed under, well, the majority of them are listed under a certain type. So like I said, Kaldor is mainly ferocity. Eshir is agility all the way. Like I said, a very fast gang. Delac is shooting in stealth. Like I said, they're like the spies of Necromunda. Goliaths, like I said, they're the all brawn, no brains. So they're obviously under muscle. Orlocks, they're mainly under shooting. They're the just the workers. And Vansar is under shooting and technology, because they're the guys that like to make their weapons work. So they excel in technology. So I'm not going to get too far in this episode per se. And we'll get indulge into this in later episodes. But we can talk about different things. All these different skill types do have an effect on the gang. So you know, we're going to Goliath, for example. Beam muscle means they extremely excel in close combat. They're able to knock enemies over and deal a lot more damage, do special moves perhaps that some other gangs can't. Vansar being technologically advanced, they're able to hack into territories more. Like if there's like a sealed door, they can hack into that more easily. They can repair things more easily, and do different things and get special equipment that some other units or sorry other gangs can't. So equipment is really based on there is exclusivity to equipment such as bionics, that sort of thing, that some units that some gangs can get, some that can't. So but that's the only exclusive things that you can't. Weapons, no, they're open to everyone. But they are specific per a character. Like, we'll say, Power fists are only for gang leaders, same with melta guns, and so there's some limitations to that. But anyways, just kind of moving on, that's all we're going to talk about now for Necromunda. I don't want to drag on too long, so I just thought it'd be something interesting to talk about, because Necromunda is really kind of not too recognized as a game. It's a real, real fun game. It's so easy to set up to, you don't even, if you want to, if you're just playing with some friends, you don't even need to spend a dime on this game. The rulebook is available for free off the Specialist Games website. You can just download the entire rulebook, read it, and play it. All the extra stuff such as character sheets, scenarios, all that, it's available for free to download. You can, actually, my personal favorite thing is just convert your own miniatures. I haven't bought a single Necromunda miniature, but I have made my own. For my Goliath game, for example, I had some Catachans that I won at a that I won at a tournament, and these Catachans, I got so many of them that after I used them for my Tau Human Auxiliary army, I had some leftover ones. So I decided to make a Goliath gang, so I had the whole like muscle Catachans with like the white T-shirt. I mean, it looked like they're really greasy, sweaty, dirty. Painted on, added on the green mohawks and that sort of thing. So real, real simple to make your own stuff. Hell, even use stuff from other games as well. I have, I forget what the game, Warzone. I got a miniature from Warzone. It's this guy with muscle arms, and he's holding a minigun. And I believe I count the minigun as a, I can't remember if I count as a heavy stubber or a heavy bolter. But it fit the gang really well. He had like all this plating on, so it worked really well. So like I said, the conversion options are there. You can make your own stuff, or if you want to grab miniatures from other games, definitely throw them in it. It's a really, really fun, very customizable game, and I definitely suggest you guys check it out. Like I said, the rules are real for free, so it doesn't hurt to download them, read them over, and maybe do a test game, you know, play with some friends. You can have some. You don't even need a large battlefield. You can use the smallest little battlefield. The coolest thing about it too is terrain. Customizing, making your own terrain. Everything terrain based is kind of very. Is very, very industrial. Very platform based. Almost like a like an oil plant. Almost, you know, lots of pipelines, exploding containers. Waste leaking, that sort of thing. So you can look into that more. Like I said, this is something I like to expand upon more on here, or perhaps if Gilles likes to more on the Forge or other podcast, which also does Specialist Games, talk about more on that. So
yeah, we'll definitely be covering that in the sometime in the future.
Yeah,
but just one thing before you. Before we end off with this, Steve,
yep.
Besides, you know, taking a bit of 40K, what other miniature game would you say that Necromunda kind of plays like?
Like I said, it is in the way, like the closest thing I can kind of think of it is it's the Mordheim of 40K. It's that small group based, a small group objective based game where you have your own characters. You can name your own characters, every character kind of excels in their own way. Perhaps not as independent as Mordheim, where every character is their own. Whereas this one is, you can have a few of a certain kind, but it's like very, very similar to that. It's all based within the 40K universe. So anyway. I said, I hope you guys enjoyed that. it kind of gives you a little bit more knowledge, but like I said, it's a really underappreciated game. Not a lot of people are into that. So,
I'm actually tempted to now kind of take more of a look into it after hearing that, actually.
Yeah. Actually, if we can, they have it testing out at Games Day, so if you want, we can probably hit up a game of that if we have time.
Definitely, definitely.
I managed to hit up a game last year. They had a table running. And like I said, it was been a while since I played, so I saw the table and I just couldn't resist. So
That was like me with a Battlefleet Gothic, actually.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a very fun game. So anyway, let's move on. Let's finish up this show. We'll only take 3 questions now because we're already running pretty long. But anyway, let's move on to listener feedback. So Chris, you want to read off the first question for us?
Sure. It says, "Hey guys, what are your event plans for Games Day? You have people all across North America with the MW Union, so I'm sure you're going to some events." Jack K.
We are going to be going to Games Day. One thing I should explain, though plans are not 100% solid yet, so we're not confirming anything yet. Well, us, for example, myself, Stephen Casagrande, and Justin Gillies, here, we'll be heading down to Games Day Toronto. That's on the 21st. And we will be down there, and we'll be, along with some others, we'll be definitely covering Games Day.
Oh, for sure.
We'll talk about that as we get closer. So we have some special stuff planned. So as for other events, there's also another Games Day coming up, and that is Games Day Baltimore. Again, plans are not 100% concrete yet, but Chris, you were heading down?
Yeah.
To Games Day Baltimore?
Me and my buddy Chris Deeks are going to head down there for a weekend.
So Chris here is going to be heading down, and also with him is Spencer and Phil from 40K Radio are also heading down to Games Day Baltimore as well. So we got a 3-man crew down there. We got a 3-man crew in Games Day Toronto as well. So we got the coverage.
Oh, yeah. Going on with Games Day, I just kind of want to also say this. Me and a buddy of mine are going to be doing a banner, so I'm definitely going to be showing pictures of that. So
a banner?
Yeah, for the banner competition.
Oh, God.
We're doing an orc banner, 40K.
There's an orc banner.
No, actually, last year I saw a couple Eldar, actually.
Eldar appreciated with banners? What?
I know. I was shocked myself.
Really? I didn't see a single... Or no, I saw one banner when I was there.
I saw the little eye with the tear thing going on. I don't remember the name of the symbol.
Oh, no, that's what I saw. I remember that one now.
Yeah, it was like a purplish-blue background in the... like really bright yellow, the really bright yellow eye. It was really cool. I don't know the eye actually, so I can't really help you there.
Too tired, thanks.
Was it? I'm probably mistaken. People are gonna yell at me. But was it a Yidian? I forget.
Uthwe. No, Uthwe is a crying eye, but they're not blue and yellow.
No. Yeah, I probably have a ton of people yelling at me right now. No, you idiot! It's this!
blue and yellow would be Illidan.
Was it Illidan?
Illidan is blue and yellow.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Iyanden. They're blue and yellow, but the crying eye is Uthwe.
I don't know. I just remember the crying eye. The colors could be wrong. I don't really remember. I just remember seeing an Eldar.
Anyway, let's move on to the next question.
Okay. So I'll be taking this one. It's Dear Drop Podcast Crew, with the oh-so-near release of 40K 5th Edition, how well do you think it will be accepted by the gaming community?
That's from Drew Hauser.
Yes.
I think it's going to be a mixed bag of nuts because...
Well, these release events always are. You have the people who say, you know, the old edition was a great edition, it shouldn't change.
People still praise, you know, second edition was the edition, that sort of thing. Personally, I like third the best. But fourth edition was good. Fifth edition is going to have those well-needed revisions to it. But I also have the feeling that it's going to be screwing up a lot of things, and then we're going back to the whole Codex revisions again. But the thing with 5th edition as well is that they're really simplifying a lot of things, like the damage table not going to one table, though it's nice and all, but and there's a whole bunch of other things as well that really, really simplifying the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, it's good in its own respect, but you know, in some ways, I do like the complexity of how it was before.
I think it's really going to be a mixed reaction. I think it's really going to depend on how the rulebook is really set up. I think if it's streamlined and easy to understand, it'll be very well liked. But if it's like 4th edition and no one understands a damn thing that's going on, because the main problem with 4th edition is people would go to like grand tournaments or like games day, and the problem is the rules were so
everybody had their own
stated that every like hobby shop had their own way of playing the rule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was causing too much discrepancies at games day, and there were being way too many questions asked for even just like simple scenarios that were happening. Mm-hmm. So I think if it's streamlined, it'll be accepted well. But I think if it's confusing and if too much has changed, it's gonna be mixed. Some people like it, some people won't.
That's the thing. Like, you know, though I do agree, second edition was a good system. I personally like 3rd edition best. The mechanics kind of worked out a little bit better than that. 4th edition tried too many new things for the system, and it didn't work for it in the end. Though it was still good because it was still based off 3rd. It's just, like I said, it tried to implement a few new things which really imbalanced it. And then hopefully 5th edition fixed those imbalances and... Yeah, I know they're trying to streamline it a bit more, but we'll see. You know, people are going to hate things. There's only going to be people that love it, and there's going to be people that hate it. Until I get the book in my hands and I play it for myself, then we'll determine it. But right now, it's 100% speculation. Like I said, everyone's going to have their own mixed reaction. There's going to be people that hate it out there. So, personally, I think it's going to be, overall, I think it's going to be accepted well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I see, it's going to be, you know, the next coming of Christ or anything like that, but it's going to be, people are going to like it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to our last question. Hey guys, I'm looking to customize my army for a bit by getting some nice miniatures from other companies to incorporate into my army. What are some companies to get some great-looking miniatures from? Mainly fantasy, though. Thanks, and keep up the great work.
Hmm.
From Dave Ian. So he's looking for some fantasy miniatures to incorporate, or mainly fantasy miniatures to incorporate into his, from other companies. I know there are some companies that make some fantastic-looking miniatures. I wrote down two of my favorites. First one is Avatars of War. Avatars of War basically is miniatures that are designed for all games. Basically, they make these miniatures. They're coming out with their own game system where you can have, you know, these miniatures battle out. But you know, at its core, they're meant to be incorporated into other games.
Mm-hmm.
And the miniatures are absolutely gorgeous looking, and they're cheap as well. Go to their website, just Google in Avatars of War miniatures or whatnot, and you'll go there and you'll see, and you look at that orc, it's like an orc war boss basically, and amazingly detailed, gorgeous. And like I said, they're not expensive at all. Like, for something that you pay for, like that gorgeous miniature, you're paying pretty much the same or if not more through GW. But and they're a small company. They only have a few miniatures out. They're going to be doing sci-fi as well, but they have a few fantasy miniatures out right now. They got some elves, they have some orcs, and they have some dwarves, and they all look really good. I suggest you check that out. Like, there's some really good stuff on there. The other company that I was looking at is Ultraforge. Now, Ultraforge has some very interesting miniatures. They're a small little company as well, and I like to support this, you know, the small little guys. The great other thing about them too is they're a Canadian company, so I like to support that. But they have 4 main miniatures out right now. There's a They're all resin cast miniatures, and again, amazingly detailed. You can get a mercenary giant, a tree woman, which is a piece of art of its own. If you look at this thing, it's perfect for a wood elf army. I would definitely use it in a wood elf army. The Lord of Pestilence. I mean, this guy is wicked if you want, for 40k, if you want a Nurgle Terminator Lord or something like that. Big hulking armor guy with gas mask and intestines and plaguing skin. Yeah, he's really, really awesome looking. There's also a plague demon, which is personally is screaming great on clean one. though probably a little bit more agile than the great unclean one, but again, amazingly miniatures, and they're very, very, very well done. They're actually fairly priced as well, considering they're resin miniatures. They're not pewter or anything like that. So you're paying a really good price for them. And you can also buy some demon wings too if you want to throw on the lords. And some really nice demonic-looking wings. And they also put up some... actually, I think just today? Oh, sorry, no, a few days ago, they put up an update of some of their new work. A tree lord, a pleasure demon, war demon, and some other-looking stuff. And you got to see this stuff on their website, just like the sweet-ass-looking dragon. But like I said, their stuff is meant to be incorporated into other games. Fantastic stuff from them, so I really suggest you guys check them out. You know, amazing looking stuff. Very, very well priced for both of them, both companies. And this stuff will definitely stand out on the tabletop. You can, if you're looking for other games, or more mainstream games, I'd probably say maybe look into War Machine. War Machine has some really cool stuff. I use some War Machine stuff myself. Not too much variety there because it's more of the War Machine style, but you can pass with some things. If you're looking for Armored Knights or whatnot, that's another way to go. Other than that, I would, you know, probably the most detailed miniatures out there is Confrontation. They have some amazing miniatures for pewter. And again, only fantasy with that, but you'll definitely be into that. Do you guys have any good picks at all, or?
Well, I actually have three right off the top of my head right now. One is D&D miniatures. Now, this is it is a skirmish-based game when you don't use the miniatures for your actual role-playing game, but some of their models are really well sculpted but horribly painted. And some of these would be really great for your hero. Though, just a little, there's an issue that the miniature size isn't to Games Workshop's usual standard. But say if you have it's great for, you know, when you make your own clan. Say, for example, you had a orc clan that, you know, is more northern base and has blue and ice and all that, then that's when you could probably grab a frost giant from, you know, D&D miniatures and add that Warhammer taste to it. Also, going on with how you said War Machine, they also have a fantasy-ish base game called Hordes from the same company that I can't really remember the name of right now. But that's also following the fantasy. Now, this is not really fantasy, but I've always wanted to try this myself. The actual Axis and Allies miniature game, that would be something that you could probably take a look at if you wanted to have some Imperial Guard. I know that our person who asked the question is focusing on fantasy, but that's something I just want to always try personally.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, yeah, that's basically it.
Chris, do you have any personal favorites at all, or?
Nope.
No? You don't like any other miniatures?
No, I do. I just, I don't really look too often. I know Avatars of War is really fantastic. I always am extremely impressed with what they do.
Yeah.
Besides that, I really don't look around as much as I probably should.
I said, oh,
I know
here's
Jeff,
the
I know Jeff got got some off of I don't remember the company.
I think it was the game. I think it was Confrontation.
It might have been Confrontation. It's like Stone Giants. He's using as a treekin. They're really nice, and they really do fit well. So you can really find other things out there. Personally, I don't really look around too much. So, yeah, I'm pretty useless right now.
I'm going to have to agree. No.
The only reason you guys keep me around is when you need another host.
Harsh. He said it, folks.
I did say it.
If you guys want to check out those miniatures I was talking about, let me start here. If you want to check out the Avatars of War, I think it's just Avatars. Go to www.avatars-of-war.com and check out their miniatures there. If you look on their forums as well, they're really close to their community and are always posting previews of work in progresses. So that's also really, really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to check out Ultra Forge, and they're amazing looking miniatures as well, go to ultraforgeminiatures.com and you can check out those guys. Support these guys because, like I said, amazing work. They're small businesses, and all the support they can get is really going to get some more fantastic stuff out of them.
I'm just looking at the Tree Woman right now, and you are right. That is a piece. That is a piece of art in its own right.
Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous. So,
wow.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyways, guys, if you have any questions, comments, or army list submissions, send them into mwunion@gmail.com. We will get to army lists. I know this is probably the second episode that we've skimped out on them, and we got a bazillion of them, so we got to start playing catch up. But sorry if we haven't got to yours yet. I know you guys sent them in a long time ago, but we will get to them. Also, be sure to join us at the Miniatures Wargaming Union, our Games Workshop news site. You can check us out at mwunion.com. Check us out, and you can check out our other great podcasts out there, such as Podhammer, 40K Radio, and The Forge, which, just to give you guys an update on, it's finally done. Yes, Gillies.
I apologize for taking so long. I apologize.
Yeah. Damn right you do.
Gas here. He got around to to cranking out the episode.
He's done watching movies.
So, just to give you guys a heads up, it is our first episode. It is a bit rough, so, let it slide. It's a good first attempt.
But think about how the drop pod was the first couple of months.
Yeah, we were really rough when we first started off, so, cut him some slack.
Oh, yeah.
But you guys should, if you're definitely into role-playing or any of the specialist games, definitely check it out. I think what this episode focuses more on role-playing, correct?
Yeah, there's just a little preview for you guys. There's Tim does a review of the GM's pack and also the character book, little special book. I can't remember the exact name of right now.
Character folio.
Thank you very much. Also, we went into a little bit talking about Fantasy Flight Games and them taking Talisman and what they're doing with it and stuff like that.
All right, so like I said, if you guys want to check that out, it's going to pump it out this week. Should be out beginning of the week. It's been quite busy and been a rough week, so I haven't been able to get to a lot of things lately, a bit lacking in the news updates on the website that unfortunately I wanted to get to and stuff like that. But so just stay tuned to the site, and the Forge should be up, well, actually will be up this week, so stay tuned if you want to have a listen to that. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the Drop Podcast on iTunes, and if you could do us a favor and leave us a review, it really helps with the show and helps spread the word a bit of the show. If you can even spread the word, that'd be fantastic. Again, thanks for Chris and Gillies for joining us on this episode of the show, and thank you all you listeners for tuning in. Thanks for supporting the show all this time, and we'll see you next time right here on the Draw Podcast.